Welcome to Leaders and Legends of Online Learning, a podcast dedicated to the experts. Thank you for listening. Each episode, we'll be learning from the world's leading thinkers and practitioners in online learning and linking to ideas relevant to online teaching, working with online learners, and digital education. You can listen to the experts and check their profiles and link to some of their work on our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com. I'm Mark Nichols, the interviewer in this episode. You'll meet Andrea Inamorato dos Santos in this episode. Andrea is a senior researcher at the University of Barcelona, following a career that's taken her from OpenLearn with the Open University UK, through Open Education Research with the European Commission, and into work as a consultant and mentor. This podcast is sponsored by the International Council for Open and Distance Education, ICDE, the leading global membership organization working towards bringing inclusive, quality education to all. By joining the ICDE global network of flexible and distance learning, you can help transform the world through inclusive education. Become a member or find out more by visiting www.icde.org. I'm talking with Andrea Inamorato dos Santos. Andrea is a senior researcher at the University of Barcelona and is widely known as a researcher, lecturer, international consultant, and mentor with expertise in digital education, educational technologies, and open education. Her work includes European Commission projects on the Open Edu Framework for Open Education and the DigiComp Edu Framework for the Digital Competence of Educators, and extends into the development of policy. Andrea has a PhD from the Open University UK, and I'm proud to serve with her on the ICDE board. Andrea, it's great to be talking with you.
Thank you, Mark. Likewise. Thank you for the invitation.
You're very welcome. Can we start with a brief overview of your career and publications?
Sure. Well, so the overview of my career, we are going to go through three different countries, because the first thing I need to say is that I am Spanish-Brazilian. I have double nationality. I was born in Brazil, so my career actually started in Brazil. Back in 1998, I was already at a very early age a lecturer at a private university in São Paulo, where I come from originally. And my career started in the field of English language, English and Portuguese languages and literature and applied linguistics. So I started as being a lecturer at a university. And then I had a language school. I have always been very entrepreneurial. I was doing a master's in Brazil. Yes, and I got very much into the field of distance education. So when I completed my master's in Brazil, an MA, Master's of Arts, I moved to the UK. And that was in 2001 to do a PhD. I started at the University of London. Then I moved to the Open University UK in Milton Keynes. So I was based in Milton Keynes for 10 years of my life.
Right.
And I enjoyed it very much, Mark, I must say. And, well, in the UK, I did another master's, a master's of science, then a PhD, and I started working as a research fellow at the Open University. That was back in 2006.
And that was with the IET, was it?
With the IET, correct, with the Open Learn project. The IET is the Institute of Educational Technology. It was fantastic. And that was when I first came across the concept of open education in the way that we know it. So I had my contract there had the title of Open Educational Resources Research Fellow. And I think it was one of the first contracts of its type, you know, kind of that was my job, really.
Yeah.
So I got into very much this field, yes, because of this position at the Open University. And I spent 6 years in this position working for the Open Learn and DONET project. Mm. Then I moved back to Brazil for a couple of years for family reasons. And then I had to make use of my entrepreneurial skills, let's say. So I was a consultant at the time with my own company, today called Sago Education, then DigiLearn.
Yeah.
And then I came back to Europe. Then I came to Spain, so to work for the European Commission as a research fellow and to lead on the agenda of open education. So yeah, so it has been. It is about really entrepreneurship, but also a lot of research positions that I've had so far. And nowadays, I am at the University of Barcelona, because at the European Commission, researchers have contracts for a certain amount of years, normally 6 years. I had a larger contract of 9 years because I started with a local contract initially. So I spent 9 years at the European Commission doing research at the policy level. And then when my contract ended, I had applied for a type of advanced fellowship, let's say, of the Spanish government. We could say that it's an advanced tenure track, a very prestigious one in Spain, offered by the Minister of Science, Innovation and Universities. And I got it. So I got this position, and that's why I ended up as a researcher, as a senior researcher at the University of Barcelona. And yes, and this is where I am right now.
Well, congratulations. I'm very keen to dip into some of the research that you've done, because there's been some fascinating work you've done with the European Commission, and I know you're still research active. So can you tell us about some of the ideas and themes your work has provided, particularly those that are very pertinent today?
Yes, yes. Well, as I said, I was very happy to work at the European Commission for several reasons. I think that one of the interesting things is that I was doing research for policy purposes. No, so there was this intersection of research and policy, which was extremely interesting. And in this agenda, the publications mostly in the format of reports, which is different from universities where we normally publish research articles.
Yeah.
At the Commission, we did research, we published research reports. Most of my work has been around open education, but perhaps one of the most interesting things for me is the perception of open education as being really a holistic term. Mm. You know, it has always been perceived and put forward in terms of policy as a combination of practices that together could lead to more openness in education in general, widening access, more inclusion. And so it has always been an approach that goes beyond open educational resources,
yeah,
which is about openly licensed materials, to include what we call the 10 dimensions of open education. And that includes pedagogy, you know, all the open educational practices, OEP, pedagogy, collaboration, but also recognition, which has to do with recognizing certificates from different universities, different countries, nowadays micro-credentials. It has to do with research, open research, strategy, because my work has always been about institutions and individuals, so how institutions can approach openness, and then later on how individuals can approach openness, no academics. So it has always been a combination, what we've always called an umbrella term for open education, and I think it's still very much valid. You know, the Open Edu framework was first published in 2016, and then a series of other reports have been published, like Open Edu Policies, looking at national policies, and then Blockchain in Education, that in my view was about the recognition part of open education there, you know, talking about micro-credentials and the use of blockchain. So I see this as a report that was very unique in the sense that it was proposing a framework to be taken from there, really. So my work has also been around frameworks, and the beauty of the frameworks for me is that they are a starting point for engagement. You know, I think that it's through the engagement with frameworks, through an inquisitive process, that you really grow and make something out of it that is very suitable for the context. So in that sense, I think that spinning off from this Open Edu framework and all this proposition of openness that is very wide on purpose, I think that there is a lot going on right now, still, very much.
Yeah, so the Open Edu framework, I mean, the 10 elements that you've identified are very, very good. What sort of international feedback have you received on that model?
Oh, it's fantastic because, you know, following up the publication of the framework, we carried out a study called Open Edu Policies, and we scanned the then 28 member states of the European Union, now 27 because of the Brexit. And then we were looking at comparing national policies and practices against the framework. And it was very interesting because I was able to be in touch, not only me, but the whole team that I was leading at the time, to be in touch with ministers of education, with practitioners from universities. And, you know, and it was by engaging with the framework, that was the idea. The feedback we had was amazing, because then there was a true understanding that it was much more than libraries and licenses, you know, that it could be a whole strategy of a university according to what is possible to them. And then through this work, Open Edu Policies, we've identified the different levels in which countries were engaged with open education at a policy level. So some of them had strong policies in OER, really, in releasing open content, openly licensed content. Mm. Whereas other was really putting more work on, besides that, they were working across the 10 dimensions, right, at different levels. Yeah. So it was very interesting to see how the framework helped us to understand what was happening policy-wise in the countries, but at the same time, how policymakers had a nice uptake of the framework to think through their own policies.
Mm, excellent. Andrea, we're almost 10 minutes into the conversation. We haven't mentioned online learning yet. So what can we say about that with regards to the Open Edu framework and particularly reflecting on your career to date?
Absolutely, yes. I think, well, the Open Edu framework, what we tried to do was to provide a working definition of open education. And why was that? Because it can mean so many different things. So we said, okay, we need to have at least a working definition so that we can talk about it more easily. And then in this working definition, we do say that the approach is open education through the use of the digital, you know, of digital technologies. Therefore, the distance education is embedded in there, you know, and online is embedded in there. So I think that the whole approach of my work is really about open education through the lens of technology and through the lens of the online learning itself.
Mm. It's a really interesting observation that. So the online is actually the lens. It's not the focus of everything. Mm-hmm. It's just the lens by which practice unfolds. I think it's quite an interesting position to have come to, I think. We're talking about online education, it's no longer a thing in itself. It's actually something that facilitates other approaches to education.
Yes, that's right.
So we're approaching now the end of 2024. The year's gone very, very quickly. What are your observations about online education at the present moment?
Well, I think we're going through unprecedented times, really. I'm really excited about all the advances of technology. We've been always talking about as technology advances, you know, whenever you're starting a paper, we talk about the advances of technology. But I think that what has been happening now is really unique, also because of the speed in which things change. So we know that we need to be always on top of things. Otherwise, we've always been catching up. And by the way, we are anyway, I think everyone, researchers, lecturers, all of us in education know that we have a lot to learn with the way technology is evolving nowadays. But I find it extremely interesting because nowadays talking about online learning is no longer a taboo in my view. You know, I think that there is an understanding that there is a very important role in society for not only in education and for universities, but in society in general for online learning, because it could be work-based learning. You know, it could be learning that takes place at home, you know, through video, watching, whatever it is. So there is an understanding that this is part of our lives. Of course, there is still resistance. I think there will always be. But there, in my view, there is more openness to explore what it's about, what are the theories behind it, because it's not a new thing, you know. So educationalists have been there for decades studying online learning, distance education. So I find that it's challenging, you know, of artificial intelligence, but it's a fantastic time and providing us with great opportunity for growth overall.
Excellent. I wonder if we can turn back now to the start you had with the OpenLearn team.
Yeah.
So was that with Andrew Law? Was that pre-Andrew Law?
No, that was with Andrew Law, led by Patrick McAndrew.
Oh, yes. Okay.
From IIT, Andrew Law was there. Yes, absolutely.
Great. Are you able to tell us a bit about the work you did there and also the stage that OpenLearn was in at the time? I think it was just beginning, was it?
It was beginning, yes. And that was a beautiful moment for me to be engaged as a fresh research fellow there, you know, learning everything, because it was a beautiful project and it still is, you know, it has changed a lot over time. But the OU had received a grant from the Hewlett Foundation, an American foundation, called William and Flora Hewlett Foundation. And they still support the Open University in different ways in terms of distance open education. Yeah. But the OU had received a grant, a generous grant at the time for the first 2 years of the project, and has being renewed afterwards. And then, so there was a lot going on, and everything was experimental. So there was technology being developed, you know, like platforms. So the OpenLearn platform at the time had a lab space, a place for experimenting, publishing, making different versions of content, and you know, another platform that was Twin, that the university itself could publish its already quality proof materials, let's say. Yeah. So everything was very experimental. And as a researcher, it was great for me because there was so much to learn and so much to do. And I think the beauty of it is that although it dates back 2006, around the beginning of the project, 2005, 2006, I joined in 2006. You know, when I read the OpenLearn research report that we published covering the 2006-2009 period, the very first, you know, the early days, yeah. I see so much in there that there is still relevant, you know. So we still have some questions such as who engages with open education, who engages with open educational resources, you know. Mm. If you don't have a way to track the users, how do you know what has happened to the content, who has remixed it, so on and so forth. So it was fantastic. And it's also interesting to say that for me, it was the first contact that I had with the way the open education movement has evolved, because I think that the foundation, the Hewlett Foundation, has always set the pace for it, you know, and set the main topics. And for them, really open educational resources have always been at the center of the agenda. And maybe this is one of the reasons why sometimes when you talk about open education, the first thing that comes to mind to many people is OER, and not necessarily this broad concept or broader concept of open education that I have just mentioned, which is the approach we took at the European Commission.
Mm, great. And of course, the word open also applies to many universities, including the one that you got your PhD from and worked for with OpenLearn.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, so it's a very broad term. What are your observations about open universities then in that sense, many of which aren't involved with open educational resources? You worked for the Open University UK. You've had experience with open universities around the world.
Yeah.
What are your observations about the state of open universities at the moment and the opportunities they might face?
Yes, I think it's challenging for them, but also a moment of opportunities because, you know, there are more people being interested in studying online, studying at a distance, right? So I remember that at the OU, at least, the OU, as the mission, you know, because of being there, you've worked there, no?
Yes.
The mission is so beautiful. It is open as to people, places, and ideas. I missed one there. There is one more. Open as to people, places.
Ideas and methods, yeah.
And methods, correct. Methods and ideas, correct. That's right. And I relate a lot to this mission because, for example, for me personally, the Open University UK was open as to people because when I joined and I got a grant from the OU to do a master's and a PhD, when I left the University of London and I moved to Milton Keynes, I didn't have my Spanish citizenship, so I was an overseas student, you know, so I was open as to people. I only got my Spanish citizenship much later in life, although my father is Spanish, but I got it much later in life.
Yeah.
So because I've experienced it firsthand, you know, I've always been interested in understanding. And then I know that the OU at the beginning, I've written a chapter about the origins of the Open Universe, actually. It's in Portuguese, published in a book in Portuguese for the Minister of Education in Brazil. It was about really catering for those that were already at work, that didn't have many opportunities in life, you know. But then we could see as time went by how this profile of learners have changed, you know, and much younger learners that wanted to be in the job market started choosing the Open University because they really didn't want to finish the degree with a huge debt, or because they wanted to combine studying with working. And I think that has been opening up opportunities for open universities in many different ways. At the same time, there is more competition because what we call traditional universities, as we know, now try and share the same sort of market somehow. No?
Yeah.
But I think that's where open universities have an advantage, you know, because this is their essence. You know, they have the knowledge, they have the tools, they have the staff that is already converted. And, you know, so in my view, there is a huge advantage for open universities in that sense nowadays.
Thanks, Andrea. So the research you'd most like to see, you find a book on the shelf or you open up your favorite journal and you find the article that really gets you moving. What's that article about? What's the research you'd most like to read about?
I think it would be about the complexities of open education. Yeah. But then I'm not talking about open universities. I'm talking about open education in general, in traditional universities, in society, you know, for to help upskill and reskill the workforce, for anyone who is interested in learning, to the open learner. Because this is one of the things that I've faced throughout my career, was that I've always sensed that quite often when you're talking to stakeholders or you're trying and sell an idea or concept or making people to engage with that concept through a framework, whatever that is, it has to be as simple as possible, you know. But when you think about the open education in such a broad way as we did, we still do, it's more difficult to explain all the complexities behind it, because then it's no longer only about open educational resources, which are defined by the use of open licenses. It's still complex, but much easier to understand than when you step back and look at it, you know, through different dimensions. And then you think, okay, where can I position my university across these dimensions? Or should I focus my university or my school or my own work as an individual teacher within any particular lens? So when you look at that complexity, it's much more difficult to put open education practices into words, you know, and make it tangible for people. And so I would love to see that sort of exploration, you know, these complexities going way beyond OER and open research, open access research.
Yeah, it sounds as though you're really well positioned to write that. Have you got anything underway?
Yes, I think, well, I plan to explore that in my upcoming book, yes.
Oh, excellent.
But I would still like to see somebody else talking about it. I would love to see that perspective from a third party as well.
Great. So you mentioned a book you're writing at the moment. Can you tell us a bit about the research you've got underway?
Yes, it's at very early days, Mark, but it's about how I see the evolving of open education through my lens, you know, my experience and practice is starting as a researcher many years ago, the different countries I've been through, you know, etc. But it's a little bit of a recollection of everything that I've learned, you know, the policy perspective, the practitioner's perspective through my personal lens, and then coming to nowadays, exactly what I'm saying to you, I see it as a complex moment, but full of opportunities. And I think that now for open education, it's still a challenging time, but I think the complexities are more evident now. They're more transparent, and therefore I thrive with that. I like it. So I'm trying to explore a little bit of all those concepts in my book.
Excellent, Andrea. All the best for those endeavors. So to complete, two people you'd recommend as leaders or legends of online learning, one whose perspective is significantly influencing you now, and one who you think otherwise might have an important perspective to share.
Yes. I think those two people are still influencing me now, and they both have excellent perspective to share, because to me, they have inspired me throughout my career. One of them is Professor Alexander Romzowski. Mm. Professor Alexander Romzowski has always worked internationally. He is British and also Polish, but has also been living in Brazil for many, many years. And he does a lot of work in Africa. So he spends a lot of his time in Africa working with adult learners. But he was one of the pioneers in distance learning, talking about his experience with adult learning and VET, you know, vocational educational training, etc. So he has always inspired me. I got to meet him in Brazil initially many years ago, even before I started working. When I was still in the field of languages is when I met him.
Yeah.
And then I've moved on, and, you know, he's always been a reference, Professor Alexander Romzowski, or as we call him, Romy, yeah? And he has also worked, yeah, for many years at the University of Syracuse in the States, in the United States.
Yeah.
So to me, you know, I would love to see him talking about his experience. And also another person who I like very much is Professor Denise Whitelock, who you may know as well. She's currently the director of the Institute of Educational Technology, IETH, Duke University, UK. And Denise, she has devoted her life, her career to distance learning, online learning in the OU. But I remember when I went to the OU to do my interview that I applied for a grant, when I was moving from the University of London to the OU.
Yeah.
She was there as the main interviewee, and she was so supportive, and she has always been, and I see her dedication, And I remember also, Mark, that I went to this interview with a briefcase, just coming from Brazil, kind of a year ago.
Yeah,
so I still had this Brazilian way of thinking without really understanding the organization that I was approaching. I came to this interview with a briefcase full of diplomas, the original diplomas I had. All of them were there.
Yeah.
Yes, expecting that somebody was going to ask me, so prove, show me your diplomas. And then nothing happened. And I was so frustrated at the end of the interview. Like, I was happy with the interview. I presented my project. They loved it. But then I was thinking, nobody asked for my diplomas. And then at the end of the interview, when I was leaving, I asked her, so you're not going to ask me? So shall I leave a copy here? So what do you do? She said, no, don't worry, just take it back. It's not going to be needed. And then I understood later on that it was another way of being open at the Open University. So that you didn't really need to show your credentials officially to be able to get in. There is a whole procedure, but it's not really dependent upon you showing your previous certificates, So I always remember fondly that moment. So that's it. That's her. Denise Whitelock.
Wonderful. Thanks, Andrea. Look, it's been a really pleasant conversation. Thank you so much for telling us about your work. And thank you too for being a leader and legend of online learning.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much, Mark.
You can learn more about Andrea and her work from our website. That concludes this episode. Be sure to go to our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com, to follow up on this episode's guest. You'll also find links to others whose ideas continue to inspire and teach online learning professionals, and you can subscribe to future interviews. If you know of a leader or legend we've not yet talked to, please do drop us a line at onlinelearninglegends@gmail.com.